shouldn't waste any more time. So, good morning to the Bureau and everybody who's here. On behalf of the President of the Assembly of the Republic, the Speaker, Augusto Santos Silva, let me welcome the members of the Committee on Budgets from the European Parliament who are visiting us today. I hope you're having a pleasant and useful stay in Portugal. I'd also like to say hello to the two Portuguese MEPs, Margarida Marques and José Manuel Fernandes, who I remember from the time when I was a member of the European Parliament. Colleagues, your visit to Portugal is happening at a time of great uncertainty and complexity both in Europe and the wider world. On the 24th of February, the world changed. It became more dangerous and more unpredictable. Whatever happens, the day that the Ukraine was invaded by Russia will always be a black day for democratic societies. We can work out when and how a war begins, but no one can predict how and when it will end. Every war leaves the world worse off than it found it, said Pope Francis. It's this fact that after the destruction of the Second World War led six countries to join together on a different kind of project, creating an area of peace, democracy and progress. A peace that has lasted since then. Democracy and progress which have extended to another 22 member states who over time started to join together to bring about in reality the ideals put forward by Monnet and Schuman. Some of these member states were once members of the Soviet Union and the Warsaw Pact. Others were or became members of NATO. The pandemic ate up our resources and greatly changed our priorities. The Ukraine war is forcing us to redefine priorities and reallocate resources, which should have been used to power a powerful, profound economic change as envisaged in the Green Deal. These opportunities will have to be postponed and the resources channeled to offset the serious consequences of the war. When we talk about reopening coal-fired power stations instead of focusing on renewable energies as Portugal's been doing, it'll be more difficult to achieve the goals fixed under the Paris agreements and combat the changes despite the ambitious Repower EU plan. The sanctions applied to Russia have also affected Western economies. The disruption of food and energy supply chains, inflation, imbalances in the financial markets, all of this is going to have repercussions in monetary and budgetary policy in the European Union. The debate on new own resources is more topical than ever. But the European Union isn't going to just increase its resources, but it's also going to have to change its institutional architecture to be able to receive more member states with different characteristics and expectations. The future of Europe is lying in that direction, but also it depends on our ability to defend and perfect our democratic institutions. In the last few years, we've seen the emergence of anti-system and populist movements, an increase in parliamentary representation of extreme right parties, interference in elections through the dissemination of fake news, increase in hate speech, in particular on social media. The impact of COVID-19 and the Ukraine war are going to lead to increase in food prices, worsening of living conditions, the sharpening of inequalities and social disruption. We're talking about enormous challenges which could weaken democratic systems, promote authoritarian or populist responses, and indeed compromise the actual European integration project. The European Portuguese thinker and essayist Eduardo Lourenço distinguished two faces of Europe, contradictory faces. On the one, you had the Europe of cathedrals, Europe of literature, Europe of philosophy and science. On the other, a Europe of conflict, selfishness, nationalism and populism. This is a dichotomy which we can see in the debates on the rule of law, migration policy, on how we can make solidarity a reality in moments of economic and social crisis like the ones we're living through at the moment. Not everyone's going to agree with me, but I would say that in its economy, institutions, values and policies, the more united and consistent Europe is, the stronger its democratic social systems and model will be. Let me end by reminding you of the Schuman Declaration. Europe will not be made all at once or following a single plan. It'll be built through concrete achievements which first create a de facto solidarity. It's in our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We, let's hope, will contribute today to the future of Europe and a better future for our citizens. Thanks very much.
Deputy Speaker of the Assembly of the Republic, Ms. Estrela, as well as Mr. Van Oldveld, who is the chair of the Budget Committee of the European Parliament. I'm chairman of Mr. Oliveira as well. I'd like to begin by giving some a warm welcome to the ladies and gentlemen from the European Parliament's Budget Committee that are here today. And I'd like, of course, to greet specifically José Manuel Fernández, as well as our former colleague, Margarida Magish, who was a part of the Budget Committee as well. And we all know exactly how competent she is indeed. I should like to take advantage of this visit. We know that the partnership agreement was just signed with the Commission a few days back for European funds, and there will be in addition to the NGEU funds. Now, this means that we have it's the clearest expression of European solidarity towards Portugal as a place of exchange and common construction in respect as well of fighting the economic and social consequences of the pandemic. I should also like to underscore the fact that your visit is an excellent one because it raises the visibility indeed of all of the issues that we are working on together. Having the budget committee come here, it shows the continued scrutiny that we carry out. This needs to, of course, be broadened to the general public. We know that there's been news much about your visit, and that has increased the scrutiny then of the use of EU funds, which I think is another good reason for visits of this sort. I should also like to just focus now on the use of European funds and its contribution to the Portuguese economy. Portugal does not has been completely overhauled, and the capacity of European funds show precisely how much can be achieved. Elisa Ferreira, Commissioner for Cohesion and Reform, published in an interview just a few days ago and drew attention to the fact that the use of EU funds should serve the purpose of change, instruments to be able to make progress. I believe indeed that this is absolutely of utmost importance. Our President of the Republic, two or three weeks ago, on the 10th anniversary of the independence of public accounts, independence, now one of the consequences of the 2008 crisis and all of the change that took place during that time, Portugal and the Portuguese economy is without a doubt one of the most cognizant of the importance of rigor in public accounts and use of public funds. Now, this rigor has a specific end, i.e., to make sure that there is a correct attribution of those funds. Public opinion has been drawn very much to the fact that, and we know that this was not the case years ago, there has been a major shift here. There's a reality that is very much changed. Now, I'd like to just remind all of you in the that those of members of the Committee on Budgets and the committee that I chair do not have the interactions that perhaps we might, considering that we have within our remit similar portfolios. Now, this specific competence was given to the Econ Committee of our National Assembly. Therefore, we established a subcommittee to have a standing scrutiny of the use of EU funds. As a part of that subcommittee, we also have the chair here of that subcommittee. Now, it is crucial, of course, to draw attention to the existence thereof. And those who are a part of the Finance and Budget Committee will, of course, make themselves fully available to the members of the EP's Committee on Budgets to give any information that they might need to heighten the visibility of use and to make sure that we are always working towards a positive change. So that, I hope, with these words, I hope that I can really underscore the importance of your visit, welcome you again warmly, and I would like to therefore yield the floor at this time. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Vice President and Mr. President. You wondered whether we have a good time here in Lisbon. I can assure you we have a very good time. We have also a very interesting time with all the discussions that we've been having since yesterday in the afternoon. And of course, I'm not going to reiterate your very good exposé on the challenges we face today, the COVID pandemic not really behind us, more or less, the Ukraine war, an energy crisis, and then inflation. And they all interact, and they all make for a very delicate, difficult situation, putting a lot of stress on all of our citizens, and also putting a lot of stress on the European project. We have the NGEU project, we have the Recovery and Resilience Facility, which will now be enlarged one way or the other with the Repower EU. These are all, I think, very worthwhile initiatives. But one of the major things that I think needs to be done now is to recognize the fact that the multi-annual financial framework that we developed 1 year and a half ago, or a little bit more even, is no longer sufficient. We live in another world than the world that existed when we negotiated that deal, and I think it needs to be recognized that that multi-annual financial framework is really in need of fundamental revision. I'm not going to take too long because a lot of other people have certainly very interesting things to say. Let me finish by a quote from one of Belgium's former prime ministers, who always used to say that Europe can only progress through crises. And if that is true, then we are probably on the edge or on the verge of major progress with respect to the European project, because indeed there's no lack of crises at this moment. But it will not happen like that. It will take a lot of hard work, a lot of goodwill, and a lot of creativity, not only in the European Parliament, but certainly also in all the national parliaments, also here in Portugal. Thank you very much.
Good
morning, everyone. Now, I will moderate this debate. I am the chairman of the European Affairs Committee, and I would like to thank the Vice President of the Assembly of the Republic, Ms. Estrela, as well as Mr. Van Overtveld, the chairman of the Budget Committee of the European Parliament, and also send my greetings to all of the members that are here today. I will be very strict with our speaking time. I realize that we have a very short span of time, but we do have enough to make sure that every single parliamentary group, both from the National Parliament and the European Parliament, would have time to take the floor. We will not be able to allocate the time more broadly than one speech per political group, but we will, of course, give the floor to the first speaker, to the chairman of the subcommittee on monitoring the European funds and the RRP, Mr. Nuno Fazenda. That obviously does include the Resilience and Recovery Fund. The floor is yours, sir.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Let me thank the members of the European Parliament, the committee chairman, the deputy speaker, etc. I'll try to be brief. I do have some points I'd like to make. First of all, Portugal's history, the way it's used community funds, as has already been stressed, they've had a very positive impact, European funds, on Portugal in all sorts of areas, transport, education, the environment, through various community program cycles and under different governments. Secondly, the fact is that the management of European funds has been recognised by the institutions of Europe themselves. The reports that Portugal submitted have always been approved by the bodies concerned, the European Commission, and also the European Court of Auditors. Also, in such a way, Portugal is one of the few countries which never has had any suspension of payments when it came to cohesion funds or structural funds. But this obviously shouldn't allow us to become complacent when we've got a new cycle of community programming before us. We've got the largest volume of community funds ever in these three instruments, support for 2020, Portugal 2020, now Portugal 2030, which was signed a few days ago, and the RRP. The RRP is, as the Commission said, an ambitious plan. It has powerful oversight mechanisms built into it. And recently there was an initial assessment, which I think was positive as far as Portugal meeting the milestones and targets are concerned. But there are two major challenges. Well, there are several, but I'll mention two. First of all, as was already said by Ms. Estrela, external factors. These derive, of course, from Russia's invasion of the Ukraine, which will lead to inflation, scarce labour force, and increasing prices. Then, something we mentioned to the European Commission in a recent meeting where various MPs from the various political groups were present. This is a concern which we bear in mind, but this is a European debate, so I'll leave it at that. The second is a question of transparency. This is very important, and oversight. That's why the Portuguese Parliament set up for the first time a specific subcommittee to monitor the spending of the European funds under the RRP. First of all, political oversight. It's a question of not just looking at the regulations, but it's a political oversight, not just the people who are spending community funds, but the people who are overseeing the sending of the funds as well. Speakers asked to come to a close. So it doesn't apply just to the RRP, but to all community funds. And secondly, the question of closeness with the people actually spending the money. There are going to be hearings held in the Parliament. These are all public. Anybody in the country will be able to see what the bodies who are inspecting all of this expenditure are coming up with in their reports. Thanks very much. I'm sorry, I'll give you people an additional 30 seconds, but that was the last time I'm going to do it. Now we're going to give the floor, I beg your pardon. First, we're represented the European Parliament. This will be Mr. Fernandes, then the Portuguese counterpart will take the floor. Good afternoon. How much time have I got? 3 minutes. Up to 3 minutes, specifies the chairman. Let me just say hello, good afternoon, particularly to the deputy speaker, Edith Estrela, and everybody who's here in the bureau, and all of those colleagues who are present in the room. Portugal's been very dependent on community funds. We talked about this political oversight, which is vitally important, because we used to be the European country, member state, that most depended on European financing. About 90% of our public investment between 2014 and 2020 was actually budgetary resources from the European Union. That's to say, we were the European Union member state which in budget terms invested least when it came to public investment. Financial resources need to follow the principle of additionality and add value, and I'm confident that this committee that you've talked about will do that. We're not lacking financial resources. We're talking about several billion euros to be spent under Portugal 2020 by 2023. There's additional monies coming, extra 1.6 billion coming under the RRP. Romania's getting 2 billion, which is less than us. And we also got Portugal 2030. I think that we could think about revising the timetable for Portugal 2030, and there's a possibility that the European Commission will do something similar for the RRP, extending it beyond 2026. Then you've also got the MFF. We've got four members who are part of the negotiating team on that point. And it's also the question of new own resources, new income. I don't think that these are European taxes. Own resources is something which, since Parliament requires unanimity, has to be ratified in the member state parliaments. We do have, I think, fair taxes at the moment. It's vitally important that we're working on the questions of fair competition, on carbon border adjustment taxes, over and above that, there's a whole job that has to be done in terms of tax evasion and avoidance. The European Commission has counted out that €1 billion is lost in tax evasion and avoidance. That's 7 years worth of money. If you could reach a conclusion. I am indeed concluding, Chairman. It's vitally important, therefore, that we use all of the monies available from Europe and also that we continue to push for changing the MFF and having new own resources. And I'd call upon the Portuguese Parliament to support us there because I think these things are vitally important. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Fernandes. Now, from the National Parliament, I'd like to give the floor from the PSD to Mr. Mendes, the principal opposition party in the National Assembly. Thank you very much to the Deputy Speaker and to all the colleagues and chair people that are here this morning. Europe is currently experiencing uncertainty. Europe has a war in Ukraine, and has completely changed the reality. In a post-pandemic world, we understand that there are major challenges and they have become only more urgent. We need that energy transition. We knew that, but it must be accelerated. It has to be the backbone of our economy and go hand in hand with the green energy transition that we need so that we lay the foundation for European energy autonomy. Turning to the issue of own resources and new own resources, this too should focus our attention. From our standpoint, this should not just be focused on increasing taxes, but should be more geared towards reindustrialization and using the new digital economy as a driving force for wealth generation. And that way, Europe would be less dependent on the U.S., less dependent on Asia. That dependency that exists today, it means that Europe hasn't been able to establish itself digitally, and that would be absolutely vital. Inflation is another aspect. Now, many have made reference to that, and many state that that comes only from the war. This is not true. If we look at the data from the pre-war period, during the pandemic, there was a scarcity of resources, there were logistics bottlenecks, and the scale of that meant that there was a consistent shift towards higher inflation. This is then in part, because of the war, but it was already there during the pandemic. And in the post-war period, we do not believe it will go away with a simple waving of a magic wand. Therefore, we must address this inflation and lay the foundation for those countries that are absolutely going to need more assistance because of inflation, for the households and for the citizens. So there should be a Europe-wide package of measures to make sure that Europe can recover from the effects of the pandemic. In addition to that, one of the major concerns when it comes to economic stimulus and investment, we will be focusing on all of these issues within the world context. Thank you very much. Now I'd like to give the floor to the European Parliament. This time I will be giving to the floor to Margarida Marques from the SND Group. Thank you very much. I too should like to send my greetings to the Deputy Speaker. Thank her for being here. She was our colleague in the European Parliament too, and has now come back to the National Assembly. I'd also like to say hello to all of the chair people that are here. Thank you to the members of Parliament that are here today. I understand that this isn't usually an hour of the day during which you work. I understand the sacrifices that you have made to be here. Therefore, I should like to thank you, because this collaboration between the European Parliament and national parliaments is of utmost importance. It's fundamental for the European Parliament, because we know that the national parliaments approve the national budget, and the European Parliament has an important role in budgets, in the European budget, and we have this important role to play in oversight consistently. Now, there has been an issue, or there have been the issue of the revision of the Growth and Stability Pact, and this has become one of the fundamental points. A second point that I wanted to raise this morning and to add to everything that has been said. We have a major challenge that the EU must face. The COVID crisis meant that we were able to build a European response in the form of Next Generation EU. With the ongoing Ukraine crisis, we need to assist the Ukrainians with the assistance of the people of Ukraine, but also to make sure that we have mitigating measures to face the economic and social repercussions of the war. Only in that way will we be able to show the European citizens that there is a European response. I wanted also to really focus on Next Generation EU. Portugal has six pillars of the RRP. They are absolutely linked to what the political priorities are of the Portuguese government, both in terms of the post-pandemic period and to the service of the European economy. We have to be sure, we have to ensure that NGEU will be a success in reimbursement of the funds in the future. This is crucial because NGEU is an innovation, and we hope that it will become something that could be used in the future, perhaps as a permanent instrument. But the most important thing is at this stage, it absolutely has to be a proven success. And one last point before I conclude, I was absolutely pleased to see that yesterday, and we heard that when we went, when we visited the AMA, Simplex is going to be applied to EU funds. Now, this was an issue that the Parliament had raised, as well as the Subcommittee on Monitoring the European Funds and the RRP, through its chairman, Mr. Fazenda, drew attention to the utility of this to be able to monitor EU funds. Thank you very much.
Now, we'll give the floor to the National Parliament representative, Mr. Miguel Cabrita from the Socialist Group. Thanks very much, Chairman, Deputy Speaker, members of the committee, members of the European Parliament. I'd like to stress the importance of a European response. We've heard about the structural issues and the structural funds that were provided, but also an immediate response to the crisis, a strategic response, having enough funding in member states so that they can respond jointly. All these things are vitally important for all European member states in the light of the successive crises which have been going through, we've all been going through. It's vitally important, therefore, that we have effective implementation mechanisms for particularly the RRP, but also other parts of European funding, the partnership agreement that Portugal's just signed, but also trying to improve our governance, our financial and economic governance. It's vitally important that a country like Portugal can put forward good indicators when it comes to public account deficit, the economic growth forecasts, and developing the labour market. I'd also stress the importance of what each member state is doing, trying to set a framework where the European Union can offset problems of fragmentation in the economic and social area and prevent imbalances. There's, if you've got something that's like the European Union, it won't be sustainable or competitive or consistent if there's too much fragmentation within that area. And so the sustainability of public accounts in all member states is very important for the whole of the European project. This is crucially important, and we need to make sure, I think this should be a priority and is a priority for the Portuguese government, make sure that economic and financial and budgetary plans are consistent and work with social programs in Europe. This is a debate that's been ongoing, of course. European instruments and economic governance instruments at European level. We need to continue this debate. We need to have the best possible linkage through the European semester on the one hand, but the various financial instruments we have available for social coordination, also the instruments which we have to correct and offset budgetary imbalances. It would be important for us from a social standpoint to try to make sure that there is sustainability as far as our European priorities are concerned. Finally, Mr. Chairman, this series of elements we should bear in mind simultaneously: compatibility of financial and social commitments and now our environmental commitments as well, is something which the Portuguese government is showing in the RRF, its partnerships it's entering into, and the public and private partnerships it's entering into. It'd be very good if Portugal can keep those goals in sight, because they're vitally important as far as we try to develop our capacity as part of the European Union. Thanks very much, Mr. Cabrita. Now I turn back to the European Parliament, and it's Fabienne Keller from the Renew Europe Group who's got the floor now. Thanks very much.
Merci beaucoup.
Thanks very much, Mr. Chairman. It's a real honour for me to speak before you, Madam Deputy Speaker, former colleague, of course, who we've been very warmly greeted thanks to what you've said, but also through the words that everyone's spoken so far. I'm also going to be speaking on behalf of Dragos Pizlaro and Valérie Ayer, and I'm delighted to do so because, first of all, I would like to thank the Portuguese National Assembly and indeed the people of Portugal for their reception. We really feel at home, almost, well, I won't say we feel like we're on holiday, but we feel relaxed and at the heart of a Europe that's moving forward. And that's what we're here to talk about. How can Europe develop financial tools for the achievement of the consistency and cohesion that have been mentioned, avoiding the fragmentation, which is a constant threat, and sharing values and goals. So thank you very much for coming in at the unusual time of Tuesday morning to talk to us. I've got a couple of questions. As José Manuel said, first of all, how do you see the revision of the MFF, European programming, to make it more ambitious and adapt it to the changed realities of a post-COVID world and the war in Ukraine? Secondly, rather linked perhaps to next-gen EU, Margarida mentioned the key aspect, which is so important for us, which we missed really in 2028. Let's hope we can rebound financially together. But we need money for that. We need the war to end. That's why we need own resources. It's not just a question of money. It's a tool for our environment so that the constraints which are going to be placed on our industry, someone talked about reindustrialization, how important it is, would have a element at borders, because we need to avoid dumping when it comes to environmental aspects. Do you support the idea of enhanced cooperation when it comes to minimum, a common corporate tax base, particularly if you've got companies that have been, this is threatened because of the requirement of unanimity in council?
Now I'd like to give the floor to a member of the National Parliament, Philippe Melo from the parliamentary group Chega. Thank you very much, Chair. I should like to send my greetings to you as well as to the Deputy Speaker and to the chairs of all of the committees. I'd also like to send specific greetings to the members of the European Parliament that are here today. Thank you so much for having made the time to come to our country in a spirit of cooperation and collaboration. We need so much of that right now. Now, I'd like to begin my comments by referring to something that was made was stated by the chairman of the Committee on Budgets of the European Parliament, referring to the Belgian Prime Minister, stating that Europe only makes progress through crises. Well, we agree fully with this. But sadly, and I think that you're aware of this, Lisbon has been going through crisis upon crisis over the course of recent years, and yet hasn't been able to rebound, but continues to progress in that. Now, considering this, we find ourselves in a chaotic situation. We have a very serious crisis in the health sector. Now, this sector is a part of the RRP as well. We have a serious crisis in education. There aren't teachers, and schools do not even have the basic equipment that they need to be able to teach. There's an inflation rate that is skyrocketing. It's the worst in 30 years. Wages are extremely low. And all of this comes together to form a perfect storm. And Mr. Fernandes said that 90% of public investment, and he said this very well, is made through European funds. So the funds, essentially 90% of which, are going there. Many on the left are skeptical of the issue of being a part of the Europe. And it's as if they would believe that Portugal had not been in the Euro, the situation would be much worse. Many who defend investment in the public sector to the detriment of the private sector, what would they do had we not had the Euro in Portugal? What would we do without these European funds? It's an enormous contradiction for these parties to be questioning the euro, considering what euro accession has meant for Portugal, and stating at the same time that European funds are well distributed when we're looking at a massive investment in the public sector to the detriment of the private sector. Only 1% of EU funds that had been dispersed at that time went to the private sector. Only 1%. And I'm sure you know better than I, no economy will be able to have success without investment in the private sector. Thank you very much.
Now we turn back to the European Parliament. Bogdan Jonca from the ECR group.
Thank you. My group has welcomed the establishment of the RRF as a timely response to mitigate the impact of the COVID crisis by protecting the EU internal market and providing the member state the means to increase their resilience and the long run. ECR has supported the bottom-up approach of the RRF consisting of a national plan, since his provides the best guarantee to EU expenditure meetings and needs on the ground and delivering EU added value. The cooperation with the Commission on the design on the national plan has been very fruitful on the technical level. The Commission has acknowledged on numerous occasions that through their intense technical dialogues with the member state, they have gained an increasingly better understanding of the structural makeup of the member state, socio-economic fabric with more in-depth knowledge of the substantial difference between member states. ECR was welcomed this evolution as it now shows why the Commission top-down on size fits all approach often does not deliver and meets resistance at member state level for the Commission lack of a sense of reality. However, a major concern remains beyond the technical level. The RRF process enters a political arena in which country size and political affiliation seems to matter more those dealing and steering the adoption of the national plans. I would like to thank you for your hospitality.
Muito obrigado.
Thanks very much. Now we turn to the National Parliament, the Liberal Initiative Group, and this will be Bernardo Blanco, who's Vice Chair of the Foreign Affairs Committee. Good morning, Chair, and thank you very much indeed. Hello to all of our guests from the European Parliament. As has already been said, Portugal still depends a lot on European funds and has done for many years. This should make us think about whether Portugal spent the European funding in the past wisely. There are problems as far as the funding is concerned, and an economy which wasn't able to, where the government wasn't able to spend the money on the most deserving projects, but also sometimes they would use European money rather than spend national money on some of these things. It's a bit sad where the main reforms carried out by the country will be done with European funding through the RRP. Obviously, it makes me sad, as I said, but it's better than nothing. I've got a couple of questions for our guests. First of all, it's 18 months ago, in March, Parliament set up a RRP monitoring group. What are their results been so far? Secondly, Parliament is talking about complete transparency, where you can see which things are being financed at European level and follow up and find data. Have you got any news about how what that project is going? Thanks very much, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much. I'm not certain whether they're going to be able to answer those questions right now, but I'm sure over lunch we'll be able to find, I'll put you with some people who will be able to answer what you want to know.
Não tenho outros pedidos.
I don't know if anybody else wants the floor. So what we can do, we don't have much time left for the debate anyway, only got 5 minutes, but we've got somebody from the Portuguese Communist Party on the list, but he's not actually in the room. So what I would do is close that section of the debate. During the lunch, the chairs and vice chairs of the committee will be able to have a more informal chat with their European counterparts. But let's now move on to the question of the conclusions. So we'll give the floor to Alfonso Oliveira, Chair of the Economic Affairs, Public Works, Planning and Housing Committee of the Portuguese Assembly. As you can see, it's a committee with a very broad remit. But to Mr. Oliveira, you have the floor. Thanks very much, Mr. Chairman. Let me just say good morning to Edith Estrela, the Deputy Speaker, the colleagues from the committees in the Portuguese Parliament, and the Committee on Budgets in the European Parliament members who are here today. And of course, if I might provide special greetings for Mr. Fernandes and Ms. Marques, Portuguese members, and all the colleagues also from the Portuguese Parliament. And let me say that it's a fact that the Portuguese Parliament has decided to set up under my committee to create a committee to oversee these fundings. And indeed made some of these comments, so it would be very remiss of me to try to gainsay what she said. And it would be very difficult to be summarising a summary. But I think that I would say that the way the Deputy Speaker mentioned Pope Francis, etc., and that idea, I think, kept ringing in my head. Wars always leave the world worse than they found it. It's a fact. There's no debating that. and it's affecting us in Europe, in the world, not just, it's not just a European war, it's affecting our economies, and we're still, of course, struggling with the what's happened in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic. So let me try and draw one conclusion, something which I think we could summarise from all of the speeches made today. The fact that we're having the meeting at all shows how important the question of Europe is. The importance that Europe has is that more than ever today we need this kind of European solidarity. It's vitally important for us to work together. That's the most important thing. I know that very often, as has been said, talking about the whole series of crises, a profound crisis that we're going through, and it's not clear, it's not something that everyone would agree to, but when you've got such a crisis which affects countries, which affects companies, which affects us, it's affecting the European Union, but Europe's ability and all of us in politics have a responsibility to take the kinds of decisions which will allow us to come through this crisis, to try to handle these difficulties. That's vitally important. The pandemic is a clear example. All of us have, I think I do, criticisms about the economic response, the fact that the speed to help our money was mobilised to help our companies. That's true. And there wasn't enough money either, I think. But the fact that we did something is important. Now we've got the war. This is something that was, I think, mentioned by pretty much every single speaker. So perhaps I can draw a conclusion here as well. As far as I'm concerned, Europe's unique, I think, we'll have to see in the future. But it's obviously very early to draw conclusions. But Europe does have this unique possibility of responding to what is an attack. It's on Putin's Russia, on Ukraine, and Europe has responded powerfully. The most important thing, I think, is that Europe's capacity to show solidarity in the face of these difficult circumstances and how to we try to improve our collective life in the light of these challenges which the war and the pandemic have forced on us. Some of these repercussions have been more and some have been less powerful, but they're all going to weigh on us into the future as well. As colleagues will be aware, some funds are spent wisely, some less wisely. That's just the way it is, and it's healthy that we have a debate about that. But I think if we have European funds, cohesion funds, the RRP, RRF, funds made available to a country, and if Portugal or some other country, it doesn't matter, doesn't manage to improve competitiveness, improve people's incomes, to raise people's standards of living, to make people's citizens' lives better, we don't have more of a balance. And I would say that it's important that we see that this money is spent wisely and spent correctly. And in these changes that have been brought about because of the war, whether or not we shouldn't indeed revise the RRPs to a certain extent. And that means we need to look towards the future and look at it perhaps in a slightly structural way. When we think that we were so dependent on energy, that suddenly became terribly clear to everybody, that should make us think as we look to the future and take decisions. Those are the vital issues. Structurally speaking, should Europe have a major debate about issues that are vital to its very existence? It's a tremendous pleasure to have you visiting us. It's something obviously Portugal has benefited from European funds, Sometimes they weren't spent wisely, as I said, but more recently now we've got the RRF funding. These are vitally important, and we all hope that they'll be spent well. We have committees now making certain that that happens. The capacity of funds to actually reach the people that they're destined for, to improve people's lives, to improve the economy, to improve the country. I spoke a bit longer than perhaps I should have done, but I do hope I touched on some of the most central aspects of the issue. The question here is scrutiny, transparency, the possibility or the importance of money getting to where it's supposed to go. That's the important thing. If not, we'll be storing up more problems for ourselves into the future, and more decisions will have to be taken then. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much. I did want to thank everyone for being so good with their speaking time, so we were able to listen to everyone in the debate. Now I'd like to give the floor to the Deputy Speaker of the Assembly of the Republic to conclude our debate this morning. Very briefly. First, I'd like to begin by thanking you. Thank you for being here. Thank you to all of the members of the European Parliament for being here. But not only, I'd also like to thank the members of the national parliaments for being here. The second point, on behalf of the Speaker of the House, I'd like to thank you all. He is currently on an official visit to Cabo Verde. And the last thing that I would like to say is just reiterate what I said before. I hope that our guests will have a wonderful stay here in Portugal. And one last point before lunch, just a pragmatic point or a logistical point. We all have a very well-deserved lunch now after this extremely fruitful debate that we've had, a very constructive one too. Now, the lunch will be taking place. I wanted to say, though, prior to that, I'd like to ask all of you to come up for a family photo so that we can record this very important moment, this happy encounter that we've had between the members of the European Parliament's Budgets Committee and the members of the Assembly of the Republic. Once again, thank you. We'll take the photo here on the stairs just behind us. Thank you.